Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Tim O'Sullivan, who is an extremely accomplished producer, engineer, and just general tech god. I'm very happy he's on this show. He's the first client of mine that I've had on in quite some time, and I do double duty with Mr. Ross Roby at Rolling Artists, and we co-manage Tim, and I've had the pleasure of checking him out at his studio in Brooklyn, and hanging out with him a few times, actually out in LA. And he actually saw my band Lido Beach perform at the hipster knitting factory Williamsburg. So this is a special and awesome show for me because I'm a big fan of this guy. It's currently December here, but by the time this episode airs, I believe it will be the new year, 2018. So I hope that you all had a really wonderful celebration, whatever you did, or if you didn't even do anything to celebrate, that sometimes is better. Next week, I have Troy Osanoff, who is a very, very big tech guy, and I'm hoping to maybe discuss a little bit about Bitcoin with him, because it's all the rage on everyone's Facebook page, and it seems like everyone's an expert, but Troy actually is an expert, and he's been very, very, very successful behind the scenes since he was a young man, so he still is a young man, but since he was like a really young dude. So I'm excited to have Troy on the show. And then the year is going to start with a whole bunch of different interviews. I mean, I'm just looking at the calendar. We're going to take a few weeks off, but not on the show. There's going to be new episodes every time. I've got another tech guy in the Bitcoin space. So Waldman's Words is becoming cryptocurrent. Oh, shoot. I've never used that before. I'm going to coin that. Oh, my God. I just coined. I'm not planning these shitty puns, so I apologize. We've got Jesse Grushak, who works for Ujo Music. He's going to be on the show. The following day, we've got Christian Schlosser, who actually, she A&Rs at the label Legend Recordings with me and does a lot of other stuff behind the scenes in addition to cryptocurrency. And then the following, we've got Maggie Kunin, who works at Hopeless Records. So lots and lots of people behind the scenes. Again, we shifted the focus from a few months in to more behind the scenes managers, A&R people, publicists, booking agents, you name it. Now a lot of tech people instead of the performers, and I'm learning a lot. So every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, tune into Waldman's Words. And on every single Sunday, it reruns at 5 a.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern time. You could download the episodes on iTunes. You could stream them also on the Adobe website and just be good to each other. Stick around for Tim O'Sullivan. Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Mr. Tim O'Sullivan. Thank you very much, Tim, for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I don't have clients on the show as often as I'd like to because there's only so many hours in the day, but I'm more than happy to have this, and I'm sure Ross is really happy too, so special shout out to Mr. Ross Roby. So what have you been up to today besides prepping for this here show?
Listening to stuff on headphones and taking walks around the neighborhood and taking notes, and just I try and do that on days when I'm not going to be at the studio at all and just kind of force myself to work on it in that way and kind of not be able to force myself to take notes and think about it when I can't actually make any changes about it.
Okay, that makes sense. It's prepping. And you are from Arizona, correct?
Yeah, I'm from Phoenix originally and then went to school in Tucson and kind of started playing in bands there in college and just kind of went from there.
Well, let's go a little bit before that. So born and raised in Arizona, I could think of a few, like Gin Blossoms, I believe, are from Arizona, and so and Jimmy World, correct?
Yeah, it's pretty much Gin Blossoms, Jimmy World. Who else? A lot of, you know, like skate punk bands like JFA, the Meat
Authority
Puppets.
Zero.
What's that?
Authority Zero, I think, too, right?
Yeah, Authority Zero. AJJ, as they're now called, or they used to be Andrew Jackson Jihad.
I've heard of them. They're on a Side One Dummy, right?
Yeah, they're big. They were the band, like, when I was playing in bands that was the cool band that everybody wanted to be.
Well, what's funny is I remember, because I'm a little bit older than you, I was exposed to the Meat Puppets on Nirvana Unplugged. That's how I heard
Yeah.
who they were, and I had no idea they were from Arizona. Do they still put out records?
They had, kind of a weird history. It's the two brothers, and I know one of them had some drug issues and stuff like that. And so the band has broken up and got back together, but they played some reunion shows in the last like year. And I know they put out some record. They put out a record like a few years ago.
They have a cult fan base, I believe. And the Kirkwood brothers, is that what they were?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They're definitely like hometown heroes.
That's dope. I mean, where I'm from on Long Island, until recently, Brand New was a hometown hero, and now there's a lot of negative press around them. But, bands like Glassjaw were big where I'm from, and The Movie Life, all these, Taking Back Sunday. But the big Long Island guy is this small guy, indie pop guy named Billy Joel. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. I have a feeling
Yeah,
that some people.
I saw him. I saw him play at Madison Square Garden last summer. A friend had tickets, and I don't know if I've ever seen like so much white wine getting thrown out at security. There was literally a trash can full at every security checkpoint of just women having to. They were trying to sneak white wine in their purses, and they were having to throw it out.
It's a big baby boomer show, and
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, the tickets are priced so that people our age can't even afford them anyway, but it's a big baby boomer show. And Billy Joel, actually, and we're gonna actually talk about you, even though I could talk about Billy Joel for a really long time, but Billy Joel has sold out Madison Square Garden more than any artist,
Yeah.
which is pretty incredible to do. I mean, that's like 20 something thousand. I mean, that's where the Knicks and the Rangers play, so. I saw Nine Inch Nails play there, and a Perfect Circle opened, so that was pretty sweet.
Nice. I saw Depeche Mode there and with Warpaint opening this summer, which was
Wow.
a interesting combination, but it was really fun. There was like the people sitting next to me, it was a mother and a daughter, and it was like Depeche Mode was her favorite, was the mom's favorite band, and Warpaint was the daughter's favorite band.
I mean, what an honor for Warpaint to play with them. I think Depeche Mode had actually one of the more successful tours of this year too, in addition to like Guns N'
Yeah.
Roses. So it's pretty badass. Anyway, so no more Depeche Mode unless you worked with them. No
Have
more
not,
Warpaint. I
unfortunately.
know that you co-wrote Piano Man with Billy Joel, so we could talk about that another time. But
That's actually,
so
that song's about me.
it is. It was
Yeah.
that's how I met you. You were sitting at some smoky ass bar on your piano for like some troops. So anyway, so Arizona, when did you start, I guess, when did you get infected by the music bug?
My uncle was in a band when I was growing up, and he's my dad's youngest brother. My dad has, I think, has four, has three brothers, and it was his youngest brother was like much younger than my dad, and so he was in high school when I was growing up and like playing in a bunch of bands and stuff, and I remember seeing his band practice, and then he put out a record. I remember him putting out a record when I was like 8 or 9 or something, and going to the store with my dad, going to the record store with my dad and buying my uncle's record and being like, oh wow, this is a thing. Like people make these, and just it was the first time I had a concept of that
I mean, it's pretty
and
cool how
really.
far how successful. I mean, sorry, I was successful is the wrong word. I mean, it might be successful too, but how supportive as an admin to your Facebook page your father is with you. So I just want to give a shout
Yeah.
out to your father for being a wonderful O'Sullivan, my second favorite O'Sullivan on the planet.
Yeah, he definitely follows all the, everything I work on and, posted like I worked on the score for Bad Grandpa and him and he went and saw that and
Did you have to apologize to him after he saw
it? Yeah, it was just like, oh, you know, well, the music was good, and there were some interesting, you know, there were some interesting scenes. I mean, like, the opening scene, which was, you know, one of the bits of the score that I worked on, is someone getting their penis stuck in a vending machine.
Yep, that's what happened. Oh, my God. Oh, boy. I mean, that's a really good movie to see with your father, right? Just to, like...
Share. Oh, I didn't go with him.
No, I know, but you should.
He went on his own.
You should share a bucket of popcorn and watch some guy get his penis stuck in a vending machine.
That was a weird project to work on too, because all the cue names were, you know, things like fish dick mouth or penis vending machine.
Oh my god.
I get these email chains that were like super long, and the subject line would be fish dick mouth, and it would be, you know, could you guys try oboe on fish dick mouth, or like really, you know, just turn up the bass.
I mean, that is so revolting. Thank you for letting me know that. It's a wonderful world we live in. So I guess back to pre-fish dick mouth. So your uncle is a musician, and then were you just like, you know what, I could do this too, or what was the transition there?
I really early on saw that and was like, I really wanted, you know, kind of grasped onto that memory and like really wanted to go to the record store and like see stuff that I had made, and ended up, you know, begged my parents for a guitar and started taking music lessons, and my parents wanted me to take piano lessons first, and so I started playing keyboards and started playing in bands with friends in high school, and everybody played guitar already, but no one played keyboard. So I started playing synth and keyboards and stuff in these punk bands. And then there was a terrible radio station at my high school that I was a DJ at. And then me and my friends would put on local concerts and stuff for charity. And just it was just kind of always a big part of my life. And then I went to college to study mechanical engineering.
Look at you. Look at the brain on Tim.
And was miserable. I hated it. I literally walked out of a chemistry class, walked out of a chemistry final like 10 minutes into it, and was like, well, I'm going to fail this. And just walked out and went straight to the academic advisor's office at the music program and said that I wanted to change majors. And so I dropped all my classes that semester and then switched over to the music program the next semester.
You know what's crazy is I remember I haven't been in school in quite some time, but I remember there were always some kids in our classes who were just like, oh, I bombed this test, and then they end up getting like a 97%. Whereas when I took a test, I knew when I screwed up.
Yeah.
I completely knew. Yeah, I have a feeling you did too.
I was like 5 minutes into this test and I was like, well, I don't know this.
It's like Klingon. So I guess... Did you shift to a music major?
Yeah, so I shifted to a music major the next semester and had wanted to do that, you know, the whole time I was in school, but just was afraid because I didn't necessarily have like a formal music background, and I didn't think I could pass. I had severe stage fright and didn't think I could pass an audition, and like and thought music school was going to be really hard for me, and also just was like, and what the hell am I going to do with a music degree?
True.
And I just...
Well, what branch of music specifically? Like what?
So I studied music theory.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's a very intense program, I imagine.
Yeah, well, at my school, it meant that I didn't have to take... that I didn't have to do recitals or do performances.
Right.
And I just had to do more theory classes and things like that.
You were more of a paper pusher than a performer.
Yeah, I wanted to learn and listen and reflect and more than like, and be around music more than like necessarily be in the front. And, you know, and I still played in bands, but was always kind of, you know, the side man, like guy who made weird noises on a keyboard. And,
I really want to go on YouTube and find these bands right now. I'm like more excited about that than pretty much anything.
They're pretty ridiculous. Luckily, I don't think there's anything on YouTube, but there may be some old MySpaces out there. It was
my
that,
God.
That era.
Say hi to Tom for me.
Yeah. But, you know, I was playing in those bands, and then, like, there was a recording studio at my college, and I didn't even, it was hidden behind the practice spaces. Like, I didn't even know it was there for the first semester. And as soon as I found out it was there, it was the only place I wanted to be. And it was all that I did when I was at school, and probably was the only thing that kept me there, to be honest.
Yeah, but I mean, at least you had a passion. There's so many people. I went to the University of Michigan. I actually have an English degree, but there's so many people who just go through the motions, who are doing a program because it's going to lead them to this grad school or this whatever, and you actually cared about what you were doing. So that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. It took a little while for me to find that path, but once I did, I was like, this is it. This is what I want to do. I want to make records.
Was your family supportive?
My parents were not supportive at all. My dad was, you know, they're very supportive of it now and they get it, but my dad was pretty, you know, my parents were going through a divorce at the time.
Oh, man.
And things were just tense with us all at that time, just in general. And then for me to be like, hey, I'm dropping all my classes and switching from this practical major and I want to be a musician. And to them, it was like the first time I had really expressed any sort of, you know, they knew I was always really into music, but it was the first time I'd ever expressed any sort of desire to pursue it as a career. And so it took them a while to come around. But my grandfather, my mother's dad, who paid for my college and was super supportive, he got it almost immediately. And
you're lucky to have that. You're very lucky to have that. I mean, do you think my mom, this like Jewish Long Island woman, was like, you're going to move to LA to pursue music after my Michigan degree? You think she was jumping up and down? I got to be honest. Exactly. She was not. I mean, she's great now, but I mean, same thing. I mean, without a divorce, it's just like, this is not practical. Most people fail. And my argument was like, you know, like for every successful lawyer, there's 20 of them who are in debt who are not doing well. So,
yeah. And for me, I kind of need that passion and that, you know, focus and that drive to care about something to really, in order to do well. And I knew that that was the thing for me that I was going to be dedicated to in order to be successful.
So I guess from there, what was your path? Like, what were you doing concurrently while you were making weird ass noises on the keyboard and studying music theory and learning about like Mixolydian stuff? Like, what else were you doing, and how did you get, I guess, behind the boards or the courage to do that? Because, you know, there's a form of stage fright that goes into a bunch of strangers coming into a room creating music and you're responsible for it sounding like shit or sounding amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I just tried to do, when I was in college, I tried to do as much stuff as possible. You know, those were the days when everyone needed demos for their MySpace. And
right.
You needed a MySpace with demos on it in order to get even little bar gigs. And so I just recorded all my friends' bands and my bands, and then did as much stuff as I could at school, and then got a job at the college radio station as the production director. Which basically meant that I recorded all the in-studio performances of bands that would come in. And that was like, I'd have, you know, half an hour with a band to record like five songs and, you know, and then I'd have to mix it later and it would go out live.
But with what gear, like how would you record people?
They gave me a $2,000 budget for equipment. And so I bought a handful of, you know, SM57s and like the cheapest Mac I could get and a couple cables, and that was about it.
Wow. So you really started complete DIYing it.
Yeah.
You're so freaking punk rock, dude. Like, I didn't realize how punk rock you were until just now, and next time I see you, I'm going to shave myself a mohawk. Even though right now mohawks aren't even punk rock. Like, now everyone has a face tattoo. I think punk rock now is like not having a tattoo and looking like Scott Waldman. That's what I'm saying. But
I mean, yeah, I have my tattoos, but like I just wear a long sleeve shirt and no one would ever know.
Nah, you just kind of look like a guy who works in film and is exhausted. That's like your look. Ross is mad corporate And I look like former President Barack Obama. I guess that's what we are. But so we're going to wrap up segment one in a little bit. But tell me more. Tell me more about, I guess, what happened. And as you got more and more experience, what was the next step?
Yeah. So after that, you know, I moved to did an internship in Atlanta and then moved to L.A. shortly after that. To work at Capitol Studios as a runner, and
which is important to do. I mean, you have to earn your stripes to work at these studios. You have to show them that you're willing to do anything. That's something I try to reinforce on all my shows.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably one of the, you know, hardest working experiences of my life, because they run you through the ringer, and the pay is terrible, and it's not enough for anyone to live on. And it basically means that you need to have a side job too. So most of the time I worked there, I had at least a part-time job on top of my full-time job. And there was periods where I had two full-time jobs just to, you know, make ends meet. But it was, you know, it was also one of the most valuable experiences I had in terms of connections that I made and things that I learned. I mean, the majority of the projects that I do now can be traced back, you know, to connections that I made there.
It's a shame I didn't know you when you were there, man.
It was a cool time. You know, I was there when John Bryan was camped out in Studio B for 2 years, and it just meant, you know, that was just a circus, but it was just crazy talented people coming through all the time, and you just absorbed as much as you could.
Nice. Well, I believe that we're going to cut this short in a little bit. So I guess, when did you leave L.A. and what did you do there? Did you move back to Arizona, or did you move straight to the hipster Brooklyn?
So I was in L.A. for 7 years, you know, after Capitol, was freelance doing other projects for a while, and then came out to Brooklyn about a year ago to really... I came out for a consulting project. I do a lot of work building studios and stuff like that. And came out for that and saw a bunch of really cool bands and met some great people, and like, you know what, I need to stay out here for a while and just kind of grow this way and start really working with some of these bands here that I'm so excited about.
Well, it's good that you did. That's how we got connected. So everyone listening, enjoy these few commercials. Stick around, learn more about Tim Sullivan and his rise in Brooklyn to the point of no return. Stick around. All right, we are back with Waldman's Words with Mr. Tim O'Sullivan. How you doing, man? I hope you enjoyed that really short break.
It was nice. I got some coffee.
You got some coffee? Sick. I'm finishing my cup that I have at the Adobe office as we speak. So I guess, what was next? Tell me more.
Yeah. So, you know, after Capitol, I went and worked for, Undertone Audio, which is Eric Valentine's company, making consoles for a while, and, did that while working on freelance projects and, building studios and stuff like that. And then worked on wiring a studio for Robbie Krieger, The Doors, and one for Lucas Haas, the actor, and a lot of really cool people. And then started working with the producer, Sam Spiegel, who has an artist project called NASA and has a commercial music company called Squeaky Clean. And worked with him as his engineer, recording and mixing everything he worked on for 3 years. And through him, I got to work with a lot of really cool people like Money Mark, who is one of my biggest heroes as a musician. You know, as a keyboard player, like, he's the guy that I try to emulate the most. And so to get to work with him and learn from him was amazing. And I also got to work with people like Karen O on, on a bunch of different projects. We did a cover of I Shot the Sheriff for a NASA Karen O collaboration, and, a
a bunch of other different projects, and worked with them for a while, and then went freelance and started working with I've been out here in Brooklyn for a year working with bands like Weird Radicals from Phoenix, who they just flew out to last week, actually. They were here for 10 days, and we recorded a bunch of songs and did a cover of a Paul Collins song, of a Nerves song, with Paul Collins from the Nerves. He came in and did guitar and vocals on it and was super fun. And I've also been working with bands like American Darlings and Conversing with Oceans, and
I know those dudes.
Yeah. You know, just a bunch of cool local bands. Just worked with a band. Yeah. I'm rambling a little bit.
It's all good, dude. It's normal. You're doing fine. I'm proud of you.
It's been a while. You know, I was a college radio DJ for a while, and then I was a DJ for a few months at a radio station in Phoenix right after college. And it's weird being on the other side.
Definitely an interesting thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I guess, tell me about your process. Like, when you wake up and you have a typical day in the studio, like, explain to me so that people know what's up.
I mean, I'm really into live tracking and trying to make things feel as live and organic as possible, and tracking things together as much as makes sense for the musicians and the songs. And, you know, my focus is really just on serving the song and what, you know, not necessarily being super married to any one process, but just, doing what's right for the song. But the things that excite me the most are the projects where I can work with, you know, a group of musicians that are really talented and are really great at playing together. And we can just kind of really dig in on the what the song needs.
Well, so I'm coming into the studio right now, and I have a song that is finished, I guess, by my definition of finished. Like, verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, chorus, you know, the standard format. And you're just not feeling the arrangement. Can you explain what to a typical listener? Because this might be someone in Birmingham, Alabama, and I know Alabama's been in the news a lot lately, but this might be someone in Alabama right now that doesn't know what arrangement means. What does that mean? What would you do to change it?
For sure. I mean, when I'm working with an artist, I like them to send me, you know, a rough demo recording, at least, of the song, or sit down with an acoustic guitar and play the song for me. And, you know, sometimes there might be a middle section or a bridge or something that, like, isn't necessarily adding anything to the song, or might be taking away from what, you know, the really important part of the song is, or maybe the chorus really is beautiful and needs to be, you know, drawn out and repeated at the end, and kind of maybe, you know, or maybe there's a lyric that I'm really excited about that maybe the you know, the arrangement isn't really giving a place to shine. And, you know, being a fresh outside listener to these ideas, I can react to that stuff and kind of, I just try and offer supportive, positive reactions to things and, like, point out what I'm excited about a song. And if that can steer towards a change that needs to happen, that's kind of the best way to make that happen.
Okay. And sometimes it's good as is. You just add certain textures, or you maybe take certain parts out. Like, if some guitar is doing something a little bit busy, or you just track 10 million things.
It, you know, it depends on the song. Sometimes, like with Conversing with Oceans, they had really well thought out, really strong arrangements, and that wasn't really a thing where we needed to, there were just a few parts where we added a lot of things to kind of flesh things out and to kind of build things. You know, with the Weird Radicals project, those guys came in with lyrics, and sometimes it was just like a chorus idea and not a finished verse, and we just fleshed those out together. And, you know, they sat down on an acoustic guitar and played the ideas, and we kind of just talked about what would be exciting and what, you know, what made sense.
Do you find that because you have a music theory background that you, I hate when I say see, now you talk about when you're rambling, when I listen to the show, I hear the ums. But do you find that you have a better ear for harmonies than the average Joe?
My music theory background definitely helps in the sense of like, I think it made my ear faster when I could, you know, hearing when things are off, or being able to pick out like what someone might be trying to do if they're not quite getting there, and kind of help that.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, you know, it's a good shorthand for when I'm working with certain musicians. It makes it easier for us to communicate, and we can talk about things in a specific way as opposed to just giving, you know, examples of songs. We can specifically say in a nerdy music theory way what exactly it is we're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can make things faster in that way.
Right.
But I think, you know, for things like that, I try and lean more on my taste and more on my reactions as a listener.
Well, as a listener, the two names that I guess when Ross sent over your stuff for representation, I was like, holy cow, this guy's worked with Karen O, formerly of the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, and James Murphy of LCD Sound System. So tell me about, what did you do for them? And I guess just highlight some of the projects that you've worked on.
Yeah. So I worked with Karen O on NASA, an artist that I worked with quite a bit, did a cover of I Shot the Sheriff featuring Karen for a Sonos commercial. And it aired during the Super Bowl and was like a super cool thing. And then right after it aired, we released it as a single, which was really super smart and got a really cool reaction and really was a really good thing for everybody. And she was super cool to work with, and it was a really fun experience. And we also worked on she did a Target commercial, which was a Christmas commercial that aired a few years ago, and we worked on that and a bunch of writing projects. And, you know, this was when I was working with Sam Spiegel, who produced the second Yeah Yeah Yeahs record. And so we would work with her on, you know, tons of different projects.
And now I guess let's go into the James Murphy, who can sell out Madison Square Garden anytime he wants.
Yeah. So James Murphy, I worked with, it was a song. I engineered a song for, it was a short film that he was directing, and it was a song with him and, Childish Gambino.
So you just got two for the price of one now, man. Thank you for saying that.
It was really cool. And it was also featuring the studio cat, Wu-Tang.
What?
On theremin. So there's a theremin part in that song, and none of us could actually play the theremin. So we put the cat on the theremin, and I ran it through auto-tune, and then chopped up what the cat played and made it into a thing.
Cats, man. They're vindictive, but they're brilliant. And any other projects you wish to highlight?
I've gotten to work on a lot of really cool things, especially, you know, as an assistant engineer and at Capitol, I got to work on a lot of crazy different projects. But I'm really proud of the work that I did as an engineer with NASA. I'm really proud of the EP I produced for the Weird Radicals last year.
John Lennon, baby.
Yeah. And we have, there's
great band.
And I love that band, and those songs are super personal to me. The singer is one of my closest friends and has been a lifelong friend, and he went through some very hard personal times, and that record was kind of a redemption.
I heard a rumor that Rodney on the Rock likes it too.
And yeah, he's a big fan of it, and he's been playing two songs off that EP, Human Being and John Lennon Headbanging, for the last, you know, few months on his show, and has been a really vocal supporter of the band, and had them come out to LA to play a show that he put on. And I'm really excited to send him the stuff we've been working on.
I mean, that's a big deal. He's a legend here and everywhere. I mean, wasn't your father really, really attracted to that? Didn't he think that was really badass?
That was definitely one that my dad was pretty excited about, because, you know, he's listened to that show for years, and then to hear something that I worked on it was a cool thing for him.
Cool. Well, what advice would you give to someone who wants to become a producer besides don't?
You know, learn your craft, learn the technical side of things.
Be specific, though, like, to learn your craft, because right now there's so many producers who just pretty much are on their laptops. So what do you mean?
Yeah,
exactly?
And I think that's what I mean, is like there's this generation of people that are on their laptops by themselves, and that is a valuable skill. And, you know, that's your instrument, and that's great. But, you know, the real valuable thing that you can learn that's going to help you advance is to get a job. You know, commercial studios are harder to come by, but get a job in a formal studio setting, working with other people, and see how other people work, and learn from them, and learn how to
learn under them
and learn under them. Yeah.
Okay.
And find a mentor, and find someone that can really take you under their wing and you can learn from.
Well, when did you know that you could do this on your own? Because it takes a lot to do that.
Yeah. I mean, I worked as an engineer for other producers for a long time, and you know, a couple of my mentors really pushed me to do my own projects. And, you know, that I kind of, you know, you always know that's the eventual goal. But I was fortunate enough to have some people in my life that were in my professional life that were supportive and really pushed me to go out on my own when the time was right.
Cool. Well, I guess right now I know for a fact that you've got lots of project potentials and lots of things in the works. So I guess if you wouldn't mind giving a few other people that you haven't spoken about a few shout outs, one of those people could be Ross Roby. One of them could be Scott Waldman, but who else? talk to me right now, I guess, about some of the stuff that you've done that we might have overlooked, because there's only so many minutes on the show. So I'd like some of them to get some listens.
For sure. Yeah, well, I'm, you know, Scott and Ross.
Oh, they're great.
Are two of the greatest guys in the industry, and they have been managing me as a producer and engineer for since April.
It's definitely been since this year, for the better part of the year.
Yeah, and you know, they've been great, and I've been, you know, through you guys, I've been reaching out to and working with all these, you know, really exciting bands, and been able to reach out purely based on, like, I like your music and this is great. You know, what are you doing? And it's been really, really nice and just really positive and healthy. And like, they've been great. And, you know, I've worked with a band, Jillian, recently that was, that's a local band that I'm really into, and like I saw them live and they were super awesome, and just Ross reached out and we made it happen, and it's been really cool.
I mean, we love every time something gets locked in, and it's hard because a lot of musicians don't realize how important the first impression of a recording is. Like right now, if you start a band and you post something online and it sounds like ass, no one's going to listen to your second thing. So a lot of people think that they can do it themselves, and some people can. But I honestly think that most people can't, and it's kind of like going to a therapist as opposed to talking to a friend. It's good to have someone on the outside, unbiased. Your job isn't
exactly
to be their friend. Your job, I mean, it'd be great if you were, but your job is to serve the song to the best degree. So
for sure. I mean, I wouldn't want to record my own music.
I wouldn't want you to either.
It's, you know, from a, it's sure you can do it maybe on a technical level, but it's that objective outside voice that really benefits everything. I mean, the other band that I've been working with that I want to shout out is a really great local Brooklyn band called No Ice. And, you know, we've started a record together, and we've got one song that's mixed and ready to go. And we're going to work on the an LP later this year.
A long play. You know, it was kind of crazy is that, like, in the industry. I mean, this show is going to be aired in 2018, but it's crazy. Bands are now just looking for singles or, like, little EPs because people just don't have the attention span, and now we're in the Spotify world. So it's pretty great to line up an LP. Hopefully next year we'll get you, like, a triple album or something.
That would be pretty nuts. Yeah, most of the a lot of the groups that I work with, it makes more sense for them to just do a single,
right,
and just do a lot of singles and not be locked into especially if you're self-releasing stuff, to be locked into, you know, a long album cycle like that just doesn't make any sense.
It's pretty wild. So I guess right now we're going to wrap this up. Would you mind just giving your socials and any way that people can check you out, and then we'll call it a day?
Yeah. So my website is osullivanaudio.com.
Say that again. You sound like a robot for a second. Say it one more time.
My website is osullivanaudio.com.
Okay.
And it's just osullivanaudio.com. And then my Instagram is TimOMusic86, which is not necessarily the best Instagram name, but, you know, the good ones are taken. But I post pretty regularly, you know, bands that I'm seeing locally, and bands that I'm working with, and just try and, you know, keep everybody posted.
Well, I appreciate you. I appreciate you doing this show. Special shout outs to your father, Conversing with Oceans, Ross, and the entire borough of Brooklyn. So every single Tuesday at 5 o'clock my time, which is the Pacific time zone region, and 8 o'clock your time. And Arizona's weird because it's like daylight savings doesn't even apply. So I believe it'll be 6 o'clock their time. And then on Sunday, the show will be rerun at 5 a.m., which I'm sure Tim will be up for. And then at 8 a.m. on the right coast. And the episode will also be available for download on iTunes and for stream on Adobe.com. So, Tim, high five. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Or thank you so much for your Tim.
Ha ha.